We have three argued cases this morning. The first is number 21-1179, Google LLC versus IPA Technologies. Mr. Modi. Yes. Just hold on one second. You go ahead. I was asking Mr. Modi.
Mr. Hartso, can you hear me?
Yes.
So today, Toronto, were you able to hear Mr. Hartso?
Yeah.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. The Board committed twin legal errors that require reversal. First, once Google came forward with evidence that the Martin reference was prior art, the Board failed to shift the burden to IPA to prove that the relevant portions of the Martin paper represent the work of the named inventors and their work alone.
And when you use the word prove there, you mean burden of production, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
Second, relatedly, the Board failed to require IPA to make any showing, much less a showing with corroborative evidence that the Martin reference co-author Dr. Moran did not contribute to the conception of the relevant portions of the Martin reference, because the Board's factual findings compel the conclusion that Dr. Moran did contribute to the conception of the relevant portions of the Martin reference, and because the Board did not find that IPA had any corroborative evidence that showed that the named inventors, that this was their work alone, we request that this Court reverse. Let me explain in detail. So turning first to the burden shifting point, Judge Toronto, that's precisely our argument. The Board committed a legal error by not placing any burden on IPA in this case. Of course, Google certainly understands it has the burden of persuasion in this case. It also understands that it has the burden of production. It more than met its burden. When you look at the face of the reference, it lists Dr. Moran. It came forward with a detailed declaration from Dr. Moran that spelled out his contributions. At that point, under this court's case law, Board should have shifted the burden to IPA to come forward with evidence that was corroborated.
Okay, let me tell you what the problem that I see here is first, the Board said everybody was credible. But there does seem to be some conflict in the testimony. Dr. Moran said that he contributed the facilitator and the subgulp, which seemed to be potentially significant aspects of the invention. Yet, one of the named inventors testified that he didn't contribute to the facilitator or the subgulps, at least as I read the testimony. So there seems to be an evidentiary conflict here which really didn't get resolved by the Board. So, can you address that? Is that the case?
I absolutely can, Your Honor. I think the issue here is that you're absolutely right that Dr. Moran and his testimony showed that he contributed to the facilitator, which is one of the key concepts. It's in the claims. It's in the Martin paper. And then what's more, Your Honor, is that the Board actually found, as you pointed out, that Dr. Moran was credible, as they found the inventors also. But I think the key issue here is that the Board found that, and this is at Appendix, because I do think this, I want to make sure you have this, it's at Appendix 17. The Board found that Dr. Moran contributed to foundational concepts in the Martin reference. And when you couple that with what IPA said in its red brief at 44, they said the Martin paper is directed to the fundamental architecture of OAA. When you couple those two, we believe it's fatal to their argument, because under Americum and this court's case law, whether you look at Allergan, you look at Katz, you look at any of the cases, IPA had the burden to come forward with more than just conclusory inventor testimony in this case to prove that those references of the Martin paper were solely the work of Mr. Martin and Mr. Sharon and their work alone.
If you look at 88.19-21, for example, and this is the Shayer, however you pronounce it, testimony, he says in particular he talks about having multiple facilitator architectures and a recursive structure that clearly existed before he became involved with the project. So, I mean, that's not a conflict in testimony?
So, Your Honor, that's what he says, right? So I think the issue here is that you have, they agree that the Martin paper goes to the fundamental architecture, right, of OAA. You have Dr. Moran coming in, who was the most senior scientist on the team, and who comes in and says, well, he contributed to the facilitated architecture, for example. But you don't have anything additional from IPA. And in fact, if you look at Dr. Moran's testimony, it was corroborated, Your Honor. If you look at, there were at least four pieces of evidence.
Sure, I mean, yes, that appears to be the case. But don't we have a conflict in the testimony that needs to be resolved? I mean, in other words, it may be that you're entitled to a remand, but I think a reversal is difficult.
Sure, Your Honor. We certainly would be happy with a remand if that's what Your Honors feel is the right remedy. I think our point here is that the board applied the wrong framework. When you look at Mr. Martin's testimony and Mr. Shire's testimony, actually, if you look at their testimony, the only place where the board credited that testimony was actually in Google's favor. Your Honor, the only thing that they relied on to find that we didn't meet our burden was the conclusory declarations during prosecution. And under this court's case law, whether you look at Americam, again, look at Allergan, any of those cases, they needed to do more. And that they're simply, when you have the evidence is so one-sided under Allergan, certainly this court can remand, but we feel there's enough here for reversal.
And just to be clear, you don't think that the patent office's acceptance of the two 132 declarations, which then generates a legal presumption of the correctness of the name of the inventors on things, is not enough to meet the burden of production?
Your Honor, it's not, absolutely not. Because this, so in this case, you would never have a case then if you were to always look at just the declarations that were submitted during prosecution, you would never have a case where you had someone else coming in and saying, well, I contributed to the foundational concepts of the paper. You would never have another case. So here...
I didn't understand that.
So my point is, Your Honor, it is not enough. The simple answer is it was not enough.
And typically, burdens of production are pretty darned easy to meet, and then we're into the realm of what's persuasive.
Sure.
I guess I read this board decision as having got to that, and not improperly either, as having got to that. And then the question is, did the board make an affirmable finding that is based on substantial evidence that your evidence simply wasn't persuasive? Because it wasn't tied specifically enough to the precise portions of the Martin reference and explained that were used for the anticipatory disclosures and indicate that Dr. Moran contributed to those and that those precise portions were themselves the kind of things that are inventive, which is to say not already in the prior art and significant. And there just wasn't any detail like that. That's how I read the board decision.
So, Your Honor, I agree with your board's reading of the board's decision, but we think the board erred in multiple ways. So let me address, I think there are two or three different points I want to respond with. First, going back to your point, well, the declarations carried their burden of production? Absolutely not. If you had Americam, in Americam you even had, in an IPR proceeding, you had the inventor come in with a sworn declaration, he was subject to cross-examination, and this board required much more. And certainly we think under Americam and this court's case law, they needed to come more than that. And if you actually look at the declarations, even during prosecution, Judge Toronto...
I'm sorry, just remind me, in Americam, this is the putative inventor coming in?
So,
or somebody that the patent office had already blessed as the inventor.
So it was one of the inventors who had obviously submitted a declaration, not a 132 declaration. They came in during the IPR proceeding and came in with their declaration. So that was the situation in America. And their declaration, if you compare it to the declaration here, their actual declaration said more. If you remember, there's testimony in the record here, and one of the reasons, and the board actually agreed with us during institution, that this declaration was not enough, precisely because it actually did not address the key question, which is...
So in the Moran declaration here, but more either there or in any other evidence, did you have evidence that the facilitator, just all by itself, was not already in the prior art?
Because
if it was, then maybe the PANU principle that says merely telling somebody something that's already in the prior art doesn't make you a co-inventor, might apply, and other things like that too. There are pieces of the Martin reference that go beyond what's in the exact claims, and having contributed to a piece in the prior art reference that's not actually used for the disclosure for the 102 or 103 case is probably not enough either. And I think what I read the board as saying is those are the kinds of details that just aren't there, and therefore we're not persuaded, notwithstanding that sentence in footnote, whatever it is, saying we credit everybody for what they say. It's just that for Moran, I don't think the board thought that he said enough.
So, Judge Toronto, I think if you look at the record here, there's no dispute that I don't think IPA has alleged this, that the facilitator, the architecture that's claimed, they're alleging, obviously, it's new, and there was no evidence. So I think if you look at, and I did want, I'm glad you brought us back to Dr. Moran's declaration, because if you look at Dr. Moran's declaration, paragraph 39, Judge Dyke, you also pointed to this, that the facilitator...
If it's your burden, why isn't it your burden to say the facilitator was new? Which you might not want to say because your friends in the next case are saying, no, even that was not new.
Understood.
But if it's your burden, don't you have to say that to put Moran into the position of an inventive contribution maker?
So, Your Honor, I guess I would quibble with you a little bit there in terms of the case law, at least as we see it. For example, in the Allergan case, this court found that whether or not someone is an inventor of the patent, that's not the question. The key question here under Katz, under Allergan, under any of the cases is who contributed to the subject matter, right, that's at the heart of the Martin paper, and clearly we have people with evidence.
Well, it isn't just that, is it? Because you'd have to show also that the inventive feature of the Martin paper was carried over as an inventive feature of the patents.
And we believe it was, Your Honor, here. We provided, if you look at our mapping that we provided, this is also laid out in our blue brief on pages 13 to 14. We showed that Dr. Moran contributed to the key concepts, the board called them foundational concepts in the Martin paper, one of them being the facilitator. And then if you look at, again, our blue brief 13 to 14, and for example, our petition at appendix 211 to 214, we relied on those portions of the Martin reference, right, in showing why they taught the limitations of the claims here. So we more than met our burden of whether you want to call it production, Your Honor, and persuasion. Whereas what did they have? Your Honor, they had all the evidence. All they came forward with were the prosecution declarations.
Where in the petition do you connect the facilitator concept to the inventive concept and the patent?
Sure, Your Honor. So I think if you look at, for example, we can look at it together if you like. It's on pages appendix 211 to 212.
That's volume one?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
So if you look at pages 211 to 212, those are pages of our petition for the 560 patent, and they go to claim 22. So if you look at 211 to 212, you'll see, on page 211, there's Roman numeral sub 3 that lays out the claim language, right, and talks about the facilitator, Judge?
Yeah.
Your Honor, you see that? And then if you go on pages 211 and 212, we cite to the relevant portions of the Martin paper that are directed to the facilitator. And then, of course, then you circle that back with Dr. Moran's testimony in paragraph 39, where he said he contributed to those concepts. So we more than met our
facilitator burden. Concept.
Yes, Your Honor. At least the facilitator concept.
Right, but just, I guess, what I'm not sure about is the following. So this claim element says a facilitator that's capable of a very particular thing, getting a goal, tearing it apart into sub-goals. Does the and it may well be, in fact, again, your friends in the next case say it is the case, that the idea of a facilitator is old. What the foundational concept is, or the key in this element, is a facilitator that does these particular things. Does paragraph 39 of the Moran Declaration say that? That he contributed to this particular functionality of a facilitator?
So, Your Honor, I think you have to look at it, step back and look at it. So if you look at paragraph 39, what it tells us is that Dr. Moran contributed to the facilitator as described in, for example, section 4.1 of the Martin paper, Your Honor, right? You can see, and if you like, we can go through that. And then on pages 211 and 212.
But again, maybe the only thing he did was say, hey, let's use a facilitator.
Right. But I think, Your Honor, he did more than that. So again, I think we should spend, if you would indulge me, I think we should look at paragraph 39 of his declaration, because I do think it would be helpful. And it's at appendix 3669, Your Honor. So here's what he said. He said, I'm looking at the middle of the paragraph. He said, in particular, I played a significant role regarding the distributed agent-based approach, and in particular, using a facilitator as described in the OA paper at section 4 and 4.1 through 4.5. And then he said, I also played a significant role in the approach of using recursion to decompose base goals into subgoals that were then dispatched to agents. Those are precisely the concepts that are in that claim element.
Is recursion claimed?
So recursion, you may not see that particular word, at least in Claim 22, Your Honor, but the concept of taking a goal and then subdividing it, that's precisely what that limitation is directed to, and which is why if you look at pages 211 to 212 of the petition.
See, now it seems to me you've gone from something that might be too broad, that is, I contributed to a facilitator, comma, as described in the claim, not the facilitator as described without a stop saying this very precise one, to recursion, something that's not even in the claim, that's just merely one possible technique for accomplishing the broader claim decomposition function.
Right. So I think if you look at the heart of their patent, Your Honor, here it does talk about recursion and kind of taking claims, and I can find the site for you on rebuttal for that. That they do sort of decompose goals into sub-goals, and that's precisely what's claimed in that claim element 22B that we looked at. And then, so Dr. Moran did contribute to those concepts, you know, whether you want to call them inventive. He certainly did contribute to them, and he was very specific about his contributions, and then we connected them in the petition. So we believe we more than met our burden, and this court should, at a minimum, remand. Unless you have any other questions to the extent, I have any time left, I'll save it.
We'll give you 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Mr. Hartzell.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court. Stephen Hartzell, Skiermont Derby, here on behalf of IPA Technologies. The board's final written decision.
Mr. Hartzell, can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yes, I
have a concern about some of the statements that are made in the red brief, which seem to me not accurate. For example, if you look at page 35 and 36, there's a statement, although Moran is named as a co-inventor in the patents and on other patents related to other facets of the LFA project, he is not named in the patents in suit, and with good reason, he provided no inventive contribution whatsoever, a fact which Moran himself readily agrees. And there is no citation for that proposition. Can you tell me where the record shows that Moran agreed that he made no inventive contribution?
Well, Your Honor, it came out at deposition that Dr. Moran had not even agreed.
Show me where he said he doesn't make an inventive contribution. Where he readily agreed that he didn't make an inventive contribution. Where do I find that?
Dr. Moran never read the claims related to this patent.
This statement is inaccurate,
yes,
is it not? Is this statement inaccurate?
Your Honor, the statement probably isn't. My
apologies. Okay, there are other places in there too. I won't take the time to go through them, where it seems to me that your brief overstates the record. I think you should not do that.
I apologize, Your Honor. I would like to address Your Honors have pointed out today, and that has to do with burden shifting in this case. Now, as Google readily admits, it bears the burden of persuasion, which also, as the board pointed out in an IPR proceeding, necessarily includes establishing the references that it relies on our prior art. And in this case, Google did not meet its burden. So what Google has presented is Google put forth Dr. Moran's declaration.
If you believe Dr. Moran, he did make a contribution. Isn't that the case?
Your Honor, Dr. Moran was affiliated with the OAA project. He did. We're not denying that he's affiliated with the OAA project in some way, shape, or form. But as it pertains to the claims, what is claimed in these patents, Dr. Moran, we do not believe, has made a contribution. His declaration just states that he had a role in some concepts and he played a high-level role. But as Your Honor pointed out, there's not a lot of meat on the bones in his declaration. There's not a lot of detail explaining
He refers specifically to the parts of the paper where he contributed. He said he made significant contributions to the facilitator as described in there, and the division of goals into subgoals.
Yes, he does state that, Your Honor, but as the board found, there is not, those are just high-level statements with not a lot of detail. There's no detail specifying what he did or how he did it. And at the end of the day, you know, the board throughout their final written decision in multiple places said, you know, this is what they found to be lacking, is there was nothing really tying that contribution. And the board made this decision based on the full record of this case, which included all the testimony from from Dr. Moran, Mr. Shire, and Mr. Martin. And there was ample testimony from Mr. Shire and Mr. Martin that Dr. Moran's role in the project was administrative in nature, working on presentations, working on clients, that sort of thing.
Okay, there may be contrary testimony, but the problem is the board said it believed everybody.
Your Honor, yes. So I would say that we don't believe that Google made out its prima facie case and never carried its initial burden of production. However, assuming that Google did with the Moran Declaration, IPA responded, and we responded with all of the testimony from Dr. Moran admitting that there was nothing corroborating, all the testimony from Mr. Shire and Mr. Martin talking about Dr. Moran, you know, him being the administrative lead of the project, that he didn't, their testimony that Dr. Moran did not offer any suggestions or anything to change the overall architecture of the OAA project.
That's all fine, but the problem is the board said it believed everybody. If there's conflicting testimony, you can't believe everybody.
But at the end of the day, Your Honor, the board considered the entire record and found that Google's arguments and evidence lacking in persuasive. So we don't believe that Google ever sustained its initial burden of production, but even if it did, we responded with a mountain of evidence, and the board considered all that evidence, which is very factual in nature, and they found that, at best, the evidence points out, the evidence shows that Dr. Moran was affiliated with the OAA project, yes, but there was not enough time tying any inventive concept that he came up with in the Martin reference itself.
Mr. Hartzell, am I right that the board cited almost none of the Shire and Martin deposition evidence that you offer as support for you?
Your Honor, the board doesn't regurgitate all of the information, but the board in multiple places in its final written decision says that they're relying on the entire record. They make statements based on all the record and all the evidence produced at trial.
Okay, I wasn't making a point about what legal significance the absence of more particular citations might be, but just in fact, the board didn't say Mr. Shire testified to Dr. Moran's limited role and what he played, and that supports. It just didn't say that, right?
They didn't say that, Your Honor. I will point out that there are various places in the board's final written decision where they can cite two swaths of the briefing where a lot of that testimony is. But no, they did, you know, they'll, you know, for example, like on Appendix 24, you can see in the footnote where they cite things like patent owner's sir reply at 10 to 11. They do that throughout their opinion where they're citing various portions of the party's briefing and the evidence contained therein. But I admit they didn't regurgitate it all. And I think, I mean, it's only speculation on my part, but at the end of the day, the board, considering all this evidence, still came to the conclusion that Google hadn't carried its burden of persuasion, that paragraph 39 of the Moran Declaration was insufficient. It didn't go far enough and offer enough evidence or facts to establish that Dr. Moran made an inventive contribution. And I do think that has to be considered.
Can you say something about Mr. Modi's argument about, to the effect, as I understood it, that IPA didn't meet a burden of production to, in turn, then require Google to carry the burden of persuasion? And that, as I understand what Mr. Modi said, is that the Rule 132 declarations are not enough to meet the burden of production, even though they were accepted and memorialized in the actual PTO assignment of inventorship to them.
Yeah, Your Honor, the declarations do not stand alone. I understand Google's argument. I understand Google's wants to make the argument that the only thing the board considered were the Rule 132 declarations. But as you just pointed out a minute ago, the board said they considered all of the evidence in this case, all of the testimony, and they found all of the testimony credible. And some of that testimony, and we cited it in our brief, was testimony from Mr. Shire and Mr. Martin, looking at the Martin reference itself and saying,
I think Mr. Modi was focusing, at least in part, maybe more than in part, on how what you rely on to satisfy your burden of production is all testimonial and not corroborated. What do you say to that? Either that no, it was corroborated, or corroboration in this context isn't required.
Well, Your Honor, I do believe it's corroborated. So if you, going back to the original prosecution, 132 declarations, there are two of them, and they are from each inventor. That in itself is two people saying the same thing. That is some form of corroboration. But then we also have the evidence from the recent depositions of Mr. Shire and Mr. Martin saying the same thing, confirming that the work of the Martin reference is theirs. Mr. Shire had testimony in the record. I believe it's on page 30.
How is that corroborating? I mean, you mean they corroborated each other? That's not enough.
Yes. Well, yes, each of Mr. Shire and Mr. Martin individually corroborated each other at two various points in time.
I think we have cases saying that that's not corroboration. The testimony of co-inventors who have the same interest is not corroboration.
But we have that testimony, and then in addition, we also have the evidence and arguments we put forward in the brief and before the board. That, as you may recall, when the applications were filed, there was approximately 130 pages of source code that was included in there. It was included so that a practitioner could actually implement the invention. All of that source code was written by Mr. Shire.
How does that corroborate testimony that supposedly Moran was not involved in the inventive concepts? I mean, I don't understand.
Because the source code, it was supplied so that practitioners could implement the invention. And there's a source code of implementing facilitators and various aspects of that. That code is written by Mr. Shire and Mr. Martin. I would say this is akin to, I think, the DeBond case, where the inventor's testimony was corroborated by the drawing. And that was sufficient in that case. Here we've got actual code implementing some of these foundational concepts, and that was written by Mr. Shire and Mr. Martin, and not Dr. Moran.
Can I ask this? I think I remember reading somewhere, maybe in your filings before the board, and I don't remember whether you made a point of this in this court, that at least Mr. Shire was not a an interested party. That
yes,
he wasn't
Your Honor,
working. He was not employed by IPA and or something like that. Can you?
That's correct, Your Honor. Mr. Shire, both Mr. Shire and Mr. Martin, at the time of their deposition, I believe, were both employed by Samsung. They were not allowed to voluntarily testify or participate in these proceedings.
You had to subpoena them.
And we had to subpoena them, and it's something that it's a position that Google fought vigorously, but the board did ultimately allow us to subpoena them and get this information and testimony.
Sure, but so, they have an interest, don't they, in being named the sole inventors?
I'm not sure that they have an interest in you. I'm not sure if we put it in our brief, but Mr. Shire is very candid. Is very candid in his deposition that he doesn't really care what happens to these patents. He doesn't care who wins or who loses. He said all he cares about is not being subpoenaed to sit in deposition. So, from that perspective, Mr. Shire was pretty forthright. I don't think he.
You think that testimony is enough to show that he's not interested?
That is his statement, Your Honor. I mean, the man is very clearly doesn't want to be bothered any further. He doesn't really care if the patents, what happens to the patents.
Well, can I ask another record question? So I'm looking at the I guess the Moran Declaration, paragraph 39. And looking in particular at the sentence that refers to using a facilitator as described in sections 4 and 4.1 to 4.5 of the reference, at least when I'm looking at this quickly, it's just 4.5 that of that reference that is headed facilitation, that seems to address the facilitator. And the opening sentence of that is, facilitation plays a central role in OAA. At its core, our notion of facilitation is similar to that proposed by Generous, site number 7, which is to a 1994, unpublished manuscript. Was there any record development? This ties into this issue that I was exploring a little bit with Mr. Modi about whether the facilitator without more was old and therefore not inventive, which maybe this suggests, although maybe an unpublished manuscript from 1994 doesn't count. Was this sort of thing explored in the record?
No, Your Honor, this sort of thing was not explored in this record, but to your point earlier, the facilitator that's claimed has to do a lot of other things, and very specific and unique things, all of which, as was pointed out earlier, Dr. Moran doesn't say that he contributed or conceived of. In Your Honors, I see that I'm...
Well, it says it's described in paragraphs 4.1 to 4.5, right?
He makes a generic statement. That generic statement, yes, Your Honor, but that covers a lot of ground, and I do think it's important that, it, especially when his testimony is being relied on to potentially validate a patent, that his declaration needed to be a little bit more specific, and this is what the board found ultimately unpersuasive. Unless the court has any other questions.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Modi, you've got 2 minutes.
Your Honor, just a few points. I heard them say again that Dr. Moran's contribution was only administrative. Of course, the record doesn't support that. The board found in the appendix that Dr. Moran's contribution was to the foundational concepts, and that his contribution to OAA was not, that it's not a closed question, that he did contribute technically to the OAA project. Second, I heard them say that the testimony, Judge Toronto, going to your question, You're absolutely right. If you look at the board's decision, when they cite to Mr.
Why does that matter as a legal matter? Substantial evidence is judged on the record as a whole.
So the reason it matters, Your Honor, is because the board did say that the only thing they found in IPA's favor are the 132 declarations themselves, right? They said that at Appendix 23 to 24, that was the only thing that they found relied on in IPA's favor. But then when you step back and look at the evidence, when they cited to Mr. Shire and Mr. Martin, it was only in favor of Google and in favor of what Dr. Moran's contributions were. So we do think that's pertinent. And then they said, I heard them use the term mountain of evidence. All we had was the two declarations that were conclusory, clearly not enough under Americum. They talked about the Martin and Shire testimony, the deposition testimony that I already addressed. They cite to the source code, and I think Judge Reich, you're right, the source code doesn't answer the relevant question whether they, in fact, were the only ones who contributed to the subject matter of the Martin paper. And we simply, they utterly failed to make that showing. They had the evidence. They acquired these patents from SRI. SRI's witnesses came into this proceeding, yet they came forward with no evidence. The stuff that they're asking that we should have provided, they had access to it, they didn't. And ultimately, if you look at the record here, we believe, again...
You don't mean literally no evidence. You mean no non-testimonial evidence.
That's right, Your Honor, yes. And in fact, if you look at, for example, the contemporaneous papers, or the other papers that we cite to, they completely support Dr. Moran's testimony. This is not present-day testimony. That's what he said in 2003 in the other papers. And finally, Judge Toronto, I just want to give you a cite to that whole recursion concept, the decomposing goals concept. So if you look at, again, Appendix 3049, that's the Martin paper that talks about decomposing requests into sub-requests. And then you can compare that, for example, to Appendix 118, which is the patent, at column 12, lines 5 through 8.
Right, the spec. No, I have no doubt about the spec.
Right. But then I think those concepts of decomposing goals into sub-goals is in the claims, for example, in claim 22.
Can I just ask you one
sure,
sort
Your
of administrative question? Do I understand correctly that on the current state of board rulings, the only claim in this case that still stands is claim 63?
Your Honor, there's one more.
What's
it's
that?
Claim 28 and 63.
28 also?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Unless you have any questions, thank you.
Thank both counsel. The case is submitted.